VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Novak and John Russell. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, Somali and World Health Organization doctors say a medical oxygen system powered by the sun is helping save lives at a hospital in central Somalia. The solar-powered oxygen system is the first of its kind in the country. It was set up a year ago at Hanano Hospital in the central town of Dusamareb. The doctors said the system is effective and is helping save the lives of very young patients. This innovation is giving us promise and hopes, said WHO Somalia representative Dr. Mamanur Rahman Malik. Malik said 171 patients received oxygen at the hospital from the solar-powered system from February to October of last year. Of those patients, 163 fully recovered and were able to leave. Only 3 patients died. 5 others were sent to other hospitals. Malik said that every year, 15,000 to 20,000 children under 5 years of age in Somalia die from the lung disease pneumonia. He said pneumonia is the deadliest disease among children under the age of 5 in the country. Until now, health officials had not had a way to reduce deaths from childhood pneumonia. Dr. Mohamed Abdi is the director of Hanano Hospital. He praised the oxygen system. It has helped a lot. It has saved more than 100 people who received the service, he told VOA Somali. Abdi said it was difficult for doctors to save the lives of children born early at the hospital before the system was put in place. The new system helps maintain high oxygen saturation levels in patients. Oxygen saturation levels are a measure of the amount of oxygen in a person's blood. Abdiaziz Omar Abdi was a child admitted to the hospital on January 16th. He had severe pneumonia and was struggling to breathe normally. The oxygen rate in his body had dropped to 60%, Dr. Abdi said. Doctors immediately gave him oxygen and provided the medicines ampicillin and dexamethasone. When he left the hospital 3 days later, the child was breathing normally. His oxygen level was up to 90%. Abdiaziz received the treatment at no cost to his family. Malik said the oxygen is being used to treat many medical conditions, including asphyxia, pneumonia, injuries, trauma, and road traffic accidents. Malik said if this innovation is used widely in Somalia, it can save the lives of at least 7,000 children who die needlessly of pneumonia. The move to install medical equipment that uses solar energy at Hanano Hospital began during the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020. At the time, many people were dying because of breathing problems. hospitals were unable to treat all the patients. And the cost of an oxygen container rose to between $400 and $600. Malik said that oxygen was the biggest need in all the hospitals. Doctors said the solar-powered oxygen system can also provide electricity for other devices. The doctors said solar power can help provide energy for refrigeration needed to store vaccines or drugs at a low temperature.
Niranjan Kumar was one of 12.5 million young people in India who applied for 35,000 jobs with the country's railways department. The department started employment tests more than a year ago. The 28-year-old mathematician, his friends, and thousands of others spent years preparing for the tests. But they did not even make the short list of people under consideration for the jobs. Last week, Kumar, along with tens of thousands of unemployed youths in Uttar Pradesh, protested what they called a mismanaged employment process. Some protesters blocked traffic. Others damaged and burned train cars. "The government is playing with our lives," Kumar told Reuters. He said the government wants to turn public jobs into those with private companies. India has long had an unemployment problem, and top government jobs always bring large numbers of candidates. But the widespread anger over the railways is creating problems for Prime Minister Narendra Modi. Important state elections are coming in February and March, including in Uttar Pradesh. Modi came to power in 2014, promising development that would create millions of jobs for young and educated Indians. But national unemployment reached 23.5% in 2020, says the Center for Monitoring Indian Economy, or CMIE. It has remained well above 7% since, much higher than the world average. As of last month, India had more than 52 million unemployed people looking for work, CMIE data shows. But that number does not include many jobless people in the country of 1.35 billion who have stopped looking for work. India's working age population, those between 15 and 64, is estimated at 1 billion, and just 403 million of those people have jobs, the CMIE says. Unemployment is a very deep crisis. It is the responsibility of the Prime Minister to resolve it, opposition party leader Rahul Gandhi wrote on social media website Twitter this month. "The country is asking for answers. Stop making excuses." A spokesperson for Modi's party said the government recognized the situation and is working to create jobs in industries such as defense. He said Modi himself had directed officials to fix the problems with employment at the railways. In the latest incident, Kumar and the other unsuccessful candidates accuse the Indian Railways of mismanaging the employment process. They say the same people were added for several different jobs. Had they shortlisted one candidate for only one role, we would have made it too, Kumar said. Kumar lives in Kashi Lodge in Bihar's capital of Patna. Those who live in the building are mostly from poor rural families, and they have been preparing for the tests for government jobs for at least 5 years. I have not paid my rent for a year, and my father has told me he won't support me financially beyond this year, Kumar added. A government job for me is the only way out. Ajay Kumar Mishra is another man living at Kashi Lodge. He said he was once a strong Modi supporter. We poured our heart out for him, Mishra said. Now he will have to listen to the same youth who are hurting so much. Mishra says he has to find a job quickly because his father will retire as a university worker next year. It is now his responsibility to financially care for his family. It's now or never for us, he said. We have started a leaderless revolution in which everyone is a leader, because everyone is affected. I'm Dan Novak.
Imagine you see an action movie on television. Perhaps it is the movie Predator, a famous film starring Arnold Schwarzenegger. It involves an alien creature who attacks people in the jungle. You decide to watch it to see if you can learn some English. Then you hear this line.
If it bleeds, we can kill it.
Even if you do not like action films, you can still learn a lot from this line. In today's report, we will explore conditional statements, statements suggesting events that depend on each other. For example, if one thing happens, then another thing happens. You will learn about one kind of conditional that involves the simple verb form and different modal or helping verbs. Let's start with some important terms and ideas. Grammar books describe different kinds of conditional statements. These statements describe relationships between two events. There is often an if clause and a result clause. A clause is a group of words with a subject and a predicate, the part of the sentence that says something about the subject. When you learn about conditional statements, you might read about names of many kinds of statements. They include the first conditional, second conditional, present real conditional, and others. The difference often comes from the place and time, the nature of the action, and the reality of the situations being described. Let's explore our example again.
If it bleeds, we can kill it.
The first part of the statement has an if clause. The clause has the subject, it, meaning the alien creature, and a verb in the simple present form, bleeds. A reminder, the simple present in English does not always mean the present time. The simple present can also describe something that is generally true or is habitual. When Schwarzenegger says, if it bleeds, he is describing a general truth. If something has blood, it is probably a living thing, and living things can be killed. Note that the result clause has the helping verb, can.
We can kill it.
This is important because can expresses possibility. It does not express that something is sure to happen. The statement could have also been, "If it bleeds, we kill it." This suggests a general rule or policy. It suggests a usual way of doing things. The statement could have also been, "If it bleeds, we will kill it." This involves the helping verb will. It expresses a strong amount of certainty about a future event. The reason Schwarzenegger used can is because he was not sure that his group would be able to kill the creature. He suggested only that it was possible. You can use these general ideas to make all kinds of statements. For example, you might say, "If you study hard, you can pass the English test." Or, "If you study hard, you will pass the English test." Conditional statements can be difficult to learn because they involve more than one clause and sometimes use complex verb forms. But with time and effort, you can learn these statements. In today's report, we explored one kind of conditional statement. If you would like to learn more about conditional statements in detail, please read our earlier stories about conditionals. We also have videos that explore different kinds of conditional statements. And remind yourself, if you carefully study the language of silly action movies, you can improve your understanding of English grammar. I'm John Russell.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. Doug Johnson and Shirley Griffith discuss the presidential election of 1920 and the man who won, Warren Harding.
The presidential election of 1920 was a turning point in American politics. It ended a period of social reforms at home and an active foreign policy. It began a period of conservative thinking in both the political and social life of the nation. American reporter H. L. Mencken described the national feeling this way: "The majority of Americans are tired of idealism. They want capitalism, openly and without apology."
President Woodrow Wilson had suffered a stroke during his second term. He was very sick. No one expected him to be a candidate again. Yet he refused to announce that he would not run for a third term. Woodrow Wilson had done much during his administration. He helped pass important laws dealing with trade, banking, and the rights of workers. He led the nation through the bloody World War in Europe. He tried, but failed, to have the United States join the new international organization, the League of Nations. The American people honored Wilson for his intelligence and ideas, but they were tired of his policies of social change, and they did not want to be involved in international problems anymore.
The leaders of President Wilson's Democratic Party understood the feelings of the people. They knew they had little chance of winning the presidential election if they nominated a candidate of change. Delegates to the Democratic nominating convention voted 44 times before agreeing on a candidate. They chose the governor of the state of Ohio, James Cox. The Republican Party also had a difficult time at its nominating convention. Four men wanted to be president. The delegates voted 6 times. None of the men gained enough support. So several party leaders met in private. They agreed that only one man, a compromise candidate, could win the support of the convention. He was a senator from the state of Ohio, Warren Harding. The delegates voted 10 more times before choosing Harding as their candidate for president. For vice president, they chose Calvin Coolidge of Massachusetts.
Warren Harding had owned a newspaper in Ohio. People advised him to enter politics because he was such a good public speaker. During the campaign, he promised lower taxes, less immigration, and more aid to farmers. He called for normalcy, a new period of peace and quiet with few changes. That is what the voters wanted to hear in 1920. Warren Harding won the election with 68% of the popular vote. In his first act as president, he invited people to visit the White House. He permitted them to walk in the garden. The act was a sign. The government seemed to be returning to the people.
Warren Harding is remembered mostly for 2 events. One was a successful international conference. The other was a shameful national incident. After World War I, Britain, Japan, and the United States expanded their navies. They built bigger and better ships. Many members of the United States Congress worried about the cost. They also worried about increased political tension in Asia. They asked President Harding to organize a conference to discuss these issues.
The conference was held in Washington in November 1921. President Harding invited representatives from the major naval powers of the time, Britain, Japan, France, and Italy. He also invited representatives from countries with interests in Asia, China, Portugal, Belgium, and the Netherlands. He did not invite the new Soviet leaders in Russia. Mr. Harding's Secretary of State, Charles Evans Hughes, spoke. He offered the conference a detailed plan to reduce the size of the world's major navies. He proposed that the world's strongest nations should stop building warships for 10 years. He also proposed that Britain, Japan, and the United States should destroy some ships to make their navies smaller immediately.
Delegates to the conference debated the plan for 3 months. Japan demanded and won the right to have more ships. But the final agreement was very close to the one proposed by Secretary Hughes. The conference was not a complete success. For example, it did not prevent countries from building some kinds of ships. These ships would prove important in the Second World War. Also, it did not create ways to protect China and the islands in the South Pacific Ocean from Japanese expansion. Yet the Naval Treaty of 1921 was the first in which the world's strongest countries agreed to reduce the size of their armed forces. Most people thought it was a good treaty.
The second thing for which President Harding is remembered is the Teapot Dome scandal. It involved the misuse of underground oil owned by the federal government. Warren Harding was an honest man, but he did not have a strong mind of his own. He was easily influenced, and he often accepted bad advice. He explained the problem with these words: "I listen to one side, and they seem right. Then I listen to the other side, and they seem just as right. I know that somewhere there is a man who knows the truth, but I do not know where to find him."
President Harding appointed several men of great ability to his cabinet. They included Secretary of State Charles Evans Hughes, Treasury Secretary Andrew Mellon, and Commerce Secretary Herbert Hoover. However, some of his appointments were dishonest men. One was Interior Secretary Albert Fall. He was responsible for the Teapot Dome scandal. Secretary Fall gave a private company the right to take oil from land owned by the federal government. In return, the company gave him money and cattle. The oil was not supposed to be taken from the ground. It was supposed to be saved for the United States Navy to use in an emergency. Private oil companies and many politicians opposed this policy. They said saving the oil was unnecessary.
Albert Fall opposed the policy when he was a member of the Senate. When he became Interior Secretary, his department took control of the lands containing the underground oil. Then he permitted private companies to use the land for a period of time. During that time, the companies could take out the oil. Some of the oil was in the western state of Wyoming. The rock mass on the surface looked like a container for making tea. So the area was called Teapot Dome. When the Senate uncovered Secretary Fall's wrongdoing, the press quickly called the incident the Teapot Dome Scandal. The Senate investigation led to several court cases which lasted throughout the 1920s. Secretary Fall was found guilty of misusing his government position. He was sentenced to prison for 1 year.
President Harding did not live to see the end of the Teapot Dome incident. In the summer of 1923, he made a political trip to Alaska and western states. On the way home, he became sick while in San Francisco. He died of a heart attack. Vice President Calvin Coolidge was in the northeastern state of Vermont when he heard that President Harding had died. Coolidge's father was a local court official there. He gave the oath of office to his son. That is how Calvin Coolidge became the 30th President of the United States.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.